entire political career, I voted pro-life. And that is exactly why I favor the stem cell initiative. I believe in saving human life. I want cures to be found.
Former Senator Jack Danforth, a blast from the past, his words that convinced many to embrace the idea of embryonic stem cell research, even though they didn't know that they were embracing embryonic stem cell research in the form of Amendment 2 in Missouri several years ago. We're going to talk about stem cell research, a little 101, a little primer on what exactly we're talking about and what we're not talking about. It's often said, come on, this is sophisticated science and it's also sophisticated ethics. It's a complex question scientifically and it's also a complex question morally. Is that true? Embryonic stem cell research, a complex moral question. We'll answer that question with Scott Klusendorf here for the next, 45 minutes of Issues, etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. You can join us 1-877-623-MY-IE or email us on this Tuesday, August the 12th, talkback at issuesetc.org. Scott Klusendorf is a regular guest. He's president of Life Training Institute. Scott, welcome back.
Todd, good to be back.
What is the biggest misconception about stem cell research, as far as you're concerned?
I think the biggest misconception is pro-lifers' attitudes toward it. The secular culture thinks that pro-lifers oppose stem cell research. That is not true. Pro-lifers are not opposed to stem cell research, Todd. We're opposed to one kind of stem cell research that requires killing defenseless human beings so that their body parts can be used to treat others. That's the kind of stem cell research we oppose. We do not oppose ethical means of stem cell research.
Is this a morally complex question, as complex as it is scientifically complex?
It's not morally complex at all. In fact, it's one of the simplest answers you can give to someone is to simply say to them, look, I want to demonstrate to you why this isn't a complex issue. And the reason it's not complex, Todd, is that it really comes down to the question, what is the embryo? Can we kill the embryo for research? My answer is yes, absolutely. Kill as many of them as you wish. Don't even think twice about it if. If what? If the embryos in question are not human beings. But if they are human beings, well, that's another whole matter altogether. We don't kill one human so another can benefit. To give you a perhaps more pedestrian example, if you have a good eye and I have a bad eye, I don't have a right to forcibly take your good eye so I can see better. Well, if the embryos in human or the embryos in question are human beings, we shouldn't be killing them to benefit other humans.
Okay, then let's do our 101, if we could. First of all, clearing up some definitions. When we say embryo, what do we mean? And then when we say stem cell, what do we mean?
An embryo is distinguished, Todd, from a mere clump of cells in that the embryo is an organized organism, meaning its body parts, its individual cells, are functioning together for the betterment of the whole. It's different than a mere clump of cells where each cell functions independent of the others and is kind of on its own. You and I are composed of clumps of cells, but why do people call us organisms and not mere clumps of cells? Well, the reason is simple. Each of our body cells, indeed each of our bodily organs and bodily parts, are working together for the health and wholeness of the whole human being. From the earliest stages of development, the embryo functions as an organism. It does not function as a mere clump of cells. To give you an example that Dr. Maureen Kondik provides that I think is very helpful, she says, you know, there's not a lot of difference between a corpse and a living human being if we're talking about a corpse that's only been dead maybe 5-10 minutes. Both the corpse and the living human being have large numbers of living cells on them. What's the difference? The difference is on the dead person, the cells are no longer talking to each other. They're not working in an integrated fashion for the health and wellness of the entire organism. The embryo, in sharp contrast, from the very beginning, is unlike the dead person because each of the embryo's cells are working in tandem for the betterment of the whole. And that's the difference between an embryo that is already a living member of the human species. And by the way, Every embryology textbook that's credible in the world will back up that claim. The embryo is much different from mere clumps of cells because it functions in that integrated, coordinated manner where corpses and mere clumps of cells do not.
Okay, there's a term that was coined, especially here in Missouri, and we heard it a lot when voters in Missouri were trying to sort out these definitions and being sold in some ways a bill of goods on embryonic stem cell research, and that term was pre-embryo.
Yeah, there is no such thing as a pre-embryo, Todd. Even pro-cloning advocate Lee Silver points out that the term is scientifically misleading, and it's used to deliberately fool the public into accepting destructive embryo research and cloning. In fact, let me quote Mr. Silver directly. He says, quote, "I'll let you in on a secret. The term pre-embryo has been embraced wholeheartedly by IVF practitioners for reasons that are political, not scientific. One major embryology textbook taught, Human Embryology and Teratology, has this to say about the term. It is, quote, inaccurate, unjustified, and equivocal." Now, that is pretty clear evidence that we're dealing here with a misleading term, and that, unfortunately, the people of Missouri, through the likes of Jack Danforth, were misled on this.
What, then, are stem cells?
Stem cells are fast-growing basic or root cells that have the capacity to form any organ of the body. The early cells of the embryo are said to be stem cell rich because these early cells are believed to be very flexible. We can take them, inject them into people, and they will form new organs where there's been damage done to those original organs. Stem cells can be derived, though, from a couple of different sources. Yes, embryos have them, but so do adults. And the interesting thing is, Todd, these basic building blocks of the body, these stem cells, are actually working better when they come from adult sources, which, incidentally, we can get adult sources or adult stem cells without killing the donor, unlike embryo cells. These adult cells are actually treating disease right now while the embryonic ones are not. The problem with the embryonic ones is they have a tendency to form tumors. We can't control them, and it's hugely expensive to try to get them. So the adult cells, which are functioning already in clinical treatments, are outpacing their embryonic counterparts dramatically, and yet if you only listen to the evening news, you wouldn't know that.
Okay, so stem cells are stem cells, but we're really talking about the source of the stem cells, one being fatal to the donor, the other not being fatal to the donor.
That's correct. We can derive stem cells from you. For example, we can take bone marrow cells from you and implant them in your brain, and they will, viola, there we go, we've got nerve cells now for the brain. They are able to transform themselves, where it wasn't believed in the past that these adult cells could do that. Well, embryonic cells, in contrast, they aren't as flexible as we once thought, and we have the danger of them being tumor-forming, which they found no cure yet for. They have not found a workaround for that.
Okay, then, how does, with only about a minute and a half here before we take our break, how does cloning figure into all of this? Because whenever this comes up, we always hear, now we're going to be talking about cloning when we talk about embryonic stem cell research.
Well, the first reason cloning relates to embryonic stem cell research, or ESCR, as we might say, is that there aren't enough leftover embryos to get stem cells from, meaning fertility clinics simply don't have the huge numbers of embryos that are no longer wanted and the parents are willing to donate to science that we once were told there were. And so we have this problem of, oh, yeah, we've got these leftover embryos, and then we find out, oh, we don't have as many as we thought. So now what they want to do is clone embryos that will have a DNA structure that is an exact representation or near exact of the original donor. So we take a stem cell from you, or excuse me, we take a body cell from you, we take a female egg, we strip the DNA out of that female egg, we insert your DNA into that vacated egg, and we have a cloning process underway that conceivably, they hope, would produce an embryo with your exact genetic makeup so that your body would no longer reject cells from a foreign source because the cells would actually mimic your own. That's the relationship.
And then with only about 30 seconds, when we hear these terms, reproductive cloning or therapeutic cloning, is there really a difference there?
No, there's not. All cloning is reproductive because all cloning results in the creation of a human embryo that is not a mere body part. It's not a mere clump of cells. It is a living human organism. The only question is, how are we going to treat that living human being? Are we going to kill it for medical research or let it be born alive? All cloning is reproductive.
Scott Klusendorf is our guest. We're doing a little stem cell research 101, going through the basic definitions and terms and how they relate to one another. He's president of Life Training Institute. You can join us. We're coming to you live this Tuesday. It's August the 12th. Our toll-free number, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-MYIE. You can also email your questions or your comments to us. We get them right here in the studio in real time. Our email address, talkback@issuesetc.org, talkback@issuesetc.org. When we come back, we'll continue our 101 on stem cell research. We need to make the case about that embryo because Scott started us out with the basic kind of the sine qua non, the make it or break it question. If the embryo is merely a mass of tissue, a font of cells, kill them all you want for research. But if the embryo is in fact a valuable human being, then we have a moral problem. What makes the embryo valuable and humans valuable? We'll answer that question after this.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues, Etc. Christian apologist Gretchen Passantino on the importance of Issues, Etc.
This is the best that Christian radio gets. And I know that anyone who listens to this show will get sound biblical doctrine and, most importantly, a complete focus on the cross and on Christ. I've done so many radio shows over 35 years, literally thousands of them, and I know of no other program that puts the cross and the gospel right at the focus of everything.
Christ-centered, cross-focused, Issues, Etc.
Honeybee Technology, what's the buzz about?
Answers with Ken Ham, president of the Apologetics Ministry of Answers in Genesis.
I find the honeybee to be truly remarkable. They fly with an incredible agility that's the envy of stunt pilots. But their navigation software, as I would call it, is packed into a brain the size of a sesame seed. Now, the honeybee techniques are being studied at, are you ready for this name? The All-Weather Bee Flight Facility, located at the Australian National University. And there are plans to use these complex techniques in very tiny spy machines that fly, and perhaps also in unmanned probes of the planets. Now consider this. Bees actually have airspeed gauges, gyroscopes, a compass that detects the polarization of sunlight, UV sensors to track the horizon to measure tilt, and two compound eyes, each with 7,000 sub-eyes, which point in different directions. Well, with all their sophisticated technology and intelligence, scientists have yet to design or build anything remotely comparable to the honeybee's flight ability. The next time you look at a bee, marvel at the wonderful handiwork of our creator.
One of the most popular attractions inside our new Creation Museum is our Hollywood-style film, The Last Adam. It's now available on DVD for your gift of any size. Get it by calling us toll-free at 1-888-89-ANSWERS. That's 888-89-ANSWERS. Or find it on the web, answersoffer.org.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. We're talking stem cell research. It's been a while since a lot of people have thought about this because it's fallen out of the news. Every once in a while, there's a story. Usually the story tells us how promising embryonic stem cell research is, glossing over the fact that the source of these stem cells requires the destruction of human embryos and of human beings. But why are these embryonic human beings valuable? They're so small, they're tucked away, perhaps they're even sitting in the petri dish or frozen in liquid nitrogen, and who's to worry about that kind of a thing? We'll answer all of those questions as we continue our conversation with Scott Klusendorf. What kind of arguments have you heard in favor of all the forms of stem cell research? 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-MYIE, or talk back at issuesetc.org. You said earlier, Scott, that if the embryo is nothing more than essentially a font of cells that is no member of the human family, then there really can be no moral objections to their destruction in this kind of research. But if they are members of the human family, then of course we have a moral dilemma on our hands. Make the case that the embryo is a member of the human family, just like you, just like me.
Well, if you consult, Todd, any leading, or for that matter, any credible embryology textbook, you will find that the embryo is indeed one of us, whether it is created through natural reproduction or through a cloning process. It doesn't matter. It is still one of us. We used to put it quite succinctly when we'd say human parents produce human offspring. The idea being that two human beings cannot get together and create offspring that is not human but later becomes human. The idea is nonsensical. So from a scientific vantage point, the facts are very stubborn. The early embryo is a member of the human family. It can't be anything else but that. The real debate, Todd, is over how we're going to value this human entity. And I think those who are trying to say it's not a human being are really disguising their true argument, which is they're saying not all human beings are equally valuable.
So then I guess that requires that we step back at least one step and answer the more general question. What is it that endues a human being, regardless of their size, development, capabilities, with intrinsic value?
Well, you can go one of two main ways with that question. One is to say that human beings are valuable only because they possess some accidental characteristic that some humans will have in greater degree than others. For example, we could pick out self-awareness and say that you are not valuable as a human subject until you have adequate levels of self-awareness. Of course, the problem with that is you not only disqualify the embryo, you disqualify the newborn. Newborns are not self-aware until several months after birth, so that would mean that killing newborns and embryos is both permissible, a point that Peter Singer is quite active in making. The other problem is that it's really arbitrary to just decide that it's self-awareness. Well, who says that's what gives us value? It would also follow, Todd, that those who have more self-awareness are greater and have more value than those of us who have less. So the concept of human equality ends up getting thrown on the ash heap of history. The second and more plausible way to answer the question, what makes us valuable, is to say that we are all valuable for something each of us possesses equally. Well, what could that be? Is it that we all have belly buttons that stick out instead of in? No, that's not going to work. It can't be that we're all great looking because some of us aren't. It has to be something we all possess equally, and the only thing we can point to that falls into that category is that we all possess a human nature that is there from the moment we begin to exist. And we all have that human nature, the same way that a dog has a dog nature and a cat has a cat nature. If you deny that it's our common human nature that gives us value, you end up having to say that some humans are more equal than others because they have a greater degree of functionality, and that's going to lead to the loss of human dignity and human rights.
Scott Klusendorf is our guest. He's president of Life Training Institute. We're talking with him about stem cell research, getting a little 101, a little primer on the subject, walking through it piece by piece. If you'd like to join us with questions or comments, feel free to do so. It's 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-MYIE, or you can email us right here in the studio, talkback at issuesetc.org. Talkback at issuesetc.org. Tomorrow on the program, Pastor Peter Kurowski will be our guest. We'll talk about a Christ-centered marriage. Everyone talks about Christ-centered marriages, but very often they become Christian-centered marriages rather than Christ-centered marriages. We'll deal with that subject tomorrow on the program. Now, you used the term human nature there, Scott, and I guess someone's going to immediately raise the red flag and say, well, now you're talking metaphysics. You're not talking science. You're not talking genetics. You're not talking embryology. How do you respond?
They're exactly right. Of course I'm not. But the truth is, Todd, everybody does metaphysics. When Peter Singer says that no living organism has value until it is self-aware and sees itself existing over time and values its own existence, he's doing metaphysics every bit as much as the Christian who says human beings have value because they share a common human nature that bears the image of their creator. Both sides are answering the same exact question: what makes humans valuable in the first place? Science can't answer that question. Only metaphysics can. I loved it when former Senator Jack Danforth said that he did not want to see theology and metaphysics injected into the debate over embryonic stem cell research. But notice what he said. He said, look, I find it very difficult to believe that a clump of cells in a petri dish has something of value we're obliged to respect. Well, wait a minute. With all due respect, Jack, you're doing metaphysics and theology every bit as much as the pro-lifer is who says that we all have value because we bear the image of our maker. Both sides are doing it. Let's quit playing games and let's not pretend only one side is doing it.
Okay, then let's go back to the argument that you're making about certain characteristics. It sounds as though the case that needs to be made here is not so much with regard to the embryo in isolation from the rest of the human family, but as the embryo as in some ways emblematic of the characteristics that all of us possess or don't possess. If I can deny you your full human dignity and protection under the law because you possess a characteristic or fail to possess one, then I have made that really the definition of human value. Is that essentially the thing you're talking about?
Oh, yes. And you're making a very valid point here, Todd, and that is that arguments that are used to disqualify the embryo as being a valuable human being can be used quite well to disqualify people outside the womb. Incidentally, Abraham Lincoln used this very form of observation when he was defending the idea that slaves should be treated as people, not property. And he said to those proponents of slavery that wanted to disqualify the slave because it supposedly lacked characteristics the white man had, he said, wait a minute. And to paraphrase Lincoln, he said, look, if you're going to say, for example, that it's skin color that gives us value, the fairer-skinned man having the right to enslave the darker-skinned man, take care. By that same rule, you're a slave to the first person you meet with skin fairer than your own. And I think you can see what Lincoln was doing here. He's showing that by the force of principled reasoning, the minute you pick out some characteristic that you arbitrarily decide is decisive so that you can exclude other human beings, that same characteristic can be thrown back in your face. So let's take the embryo. People say the embryo is not self-aware. Well, neither are you and I when we're sleeping. Neither would you and I be if we were in a reversible coma. And so these characteristics that people invent ad hoc seldom can be restricted to the victim class they hope to enslave or destroy. Rather, they end up expanding to a general view of how humans should be viewed in the first place. That's the danger.
Andy is listening in Kirkwood and waiting on the line. Hi, Andy. Thanks for waiting.
Hi, Todd. Moving on toward acceptable stem cell research, read recently an article, and I may have sent a copy to Jeff, about a little girl who was born lacking a good part of her brain, and she was declared to have cerebral palsy of some form or the other. Her parents remembered that they had had her umbilical cord frozen when she was born. Doctors went back into that umbilical cord, got stem cells of her own, treated her with them, and there's been a 50% improvement. She can talk, and she can not only walk, she can run. Comment from your guest, please.
All right, Andy, thank you very much. Scott.
Very good observation, Andy. The reality is that adult stem cells, which are retrieved from a lot of different sources, and one of the sources we're getting stem cells are our cord blood and umbilical cord sources, like what you just said. And the great news is those types of cells, which don't require destroying a donor to secure, are treating over 80 diseases right now. while the embryonic cells are treating none for the reasons I mentioned earlier. The fact that they are dangerous and tend to form tumors, and they're hugely expensive to secure. So Andy is absolutely right. We aren't living in fantasy land proposing that we use ethical sources for these stem cells. We have a very standard, reality-based premise for saying, look, we don't have to kill embryos to get these cells. We have ethical means of doing it.
This email comes from Josh in St. Louis. And when we come back from the break, we'll get a response to it. He says, just because it is complex, if we allow that it is complex, since when is complexity a reason for going ahead and disregarding our moral concerns? We'll get Scott's response to Josh's email right after this in 10 more minutes with Scott Klusendorf on Stem Cell Research.
Here's an easy way for you to publicize Issues Etc. at your church. Go to the promote page of our website, issuesetc.org, and you'll find a short paragraph to include in your weekly church bulletin. Help inform your fellow parishioners about Issues Etc. issuesetc.org, click promote, and copy and paste the text for your church secretary or pastor to include each week in the Sunday bulletin. We update this paragraph weekly, issuesetc.org.
Did you know that you can listen to Issues Etc. 24/7? Check out our website, issuesetc.org, and click on-demand audio. Listen at the gym, in your kitchen, in your garden, on your iPod, your computer, or in your car. The technology may be new, but the truth never changes. Issues Etc. on-demand audio, available for your convenience at issuesetc.org. 10 hours of new programming each week. issuesetc.org, and click on-demand audio.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Zion Lutheran, Greenfield, Wisconsin. Pilgrim Lutheran, West Bend, Wisconsin. Messiah Lutheran, Lebanon, Illinois. Zion Lutheran, Accident, Maryland. Redeemer Lutheran, Jackson, Wyoming. Messiah Lutheran, Marysville, Washington. Trinity Lutheran, Millstadt, Illinois. Our Savior Lutheran, Houston, Texas. St. Matthew's Lutheran, Bon Terre, Missouri. Good Shepherd Lutheran, Lincoln, Nebraska. Hope Lutheran, St. Louis, Missouri. Trinity Lutheran, Austin, Texas. Good Shepherd Lutheran, Collinsville, Illinois. Luther Memorial Chapel, Shorewood, Wisconsin. Christ Lutheran, Oak Park, Illinois. Bethany Lutheran, Naperville, Illinois. Emmanuel Lutheran, Dearborn, Michigan. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Go to our website, issuesetc.org, and click Sponsors. The Issues Etc. 300. Ten more minutes in our conversation with Scott Klusendorf on Stem Cell Research. I'm Todd Wilkin. Welcome back to Issues Etc. Our toll-free number, 1-877-623-MYIE. Our email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. This email comes from Josh. Interesting observation. He says, just for the sake of discussion, let's accept the premise that embryonic stem cell research is a complex issue. When did complexity become a license to do something? The pro-life community could say that because the issue is complex, embryonic stem cell research should not be undertaken. Complexity of an issue is not a legitimate argument for or against anything. It seems to me, he says, that, oh, it's complicated, is a thinly veiled way of saying you have no idea what you're talking about. We're the experts here. We don't want to talk about it, so shut up and don't tell us what to do. Your thoughts there?
Well, I agree completely with Josh's take on that. I would add one other thing. Usually when people say, well, that's a complex issue, what they really mean is, I don't have an argument to refute yours. And so I'll try to cloud the issue and escape under a veil of uncertainty. Look, we already discussed that it isn't complex, but Josh makes a very good point. If it is true that we don't know if the embryo is human, we shouldn't be killing the embryo. If our knowledge is not complete, if there's genuine complexity and we're not sure what to do, then we shouldn't proceed by killing embryos because we may, in fact, be taking a human life. So if anything, Josh is right. Complexity does not give us a license to kill.
Keith in North Platte, Nebraska writes this. Thank you for the show. I'm afraid this will sound very cynical, but the arguments for and against the murder of children have been advanced for years and lines have been drawn. The fact that it is a person that is being killed is beyond rational dispute. What is being exposed is that the advocates for killing children are without conscience, having spoken in favor of murdering children after considered thought and debate. At what point does the work of the pro-life apologist give way to the speaker of God's law, who denounces a thing for what it is, that is, an act of murder, particularly in regards to people confessing to be Christians? Your thoughts there.
I don't necessarily agree, Todd, that everyone who advocates embryonic stem cell research does so because they've hardened their hearts and they have simply decided they want to kill children. There are people who are misinformed. We saw that with the voters in Missouri who were misled on this issue. There are people who don't have their facts straight. They may not believe, for example, that an embryo differs substantially from a normal human cell. Those are factual problems. They aren't necessarily worldview divisions. Dennis Prager, I remember once saying years ago that he was in favor of early abortion because he felt that the embryo was of a different kind of thing than a normal human being. Now, he holds the same view of human value that I do. He believes that human beings, once they exist as human, have intrinsic value. He just didn't think the embryo was, in fact, a human being. Now, he was wrong. The facts of science are not on his case. But that was not a worldview dispute with Dennis. That was a factual or scientific one. So we have to be careful to not clump everyone who disagrees with us into the category of just being a hardened person who doesn't want to know the truth. But it is true there are some people who are in that category, and I don't think it's either use apologetic techniques with them or preach the gospel. I think it's both and. I think the apologist, the skilled Christian apologist, and even the skilled pro-life apologist can do both things as a means of trying to enlighten someone. So we don't have to say, well, we're going to go all this way or all the other. In certain contexts, you might be able to do both.
Someone might concede, okay, when we're dealing with the embryo, we're dealing with a member of the human family. We're even dealing with at least someone who is biologically nothing other than a human being. But they're going to want to hedge their bets on when the value that we attach to human beings attaches to the embryo. They're going to say, can we really say that from the very first moments that there is the product of conception, an embryo, that we have something that should be valued the same way we would value any other human being?
Well, there's enormous metaphysical problems, Todd, with the whole personhood argument, which is this idea that I come to be after my body comes to be. You end up saying crazy things like that. Imagine a conversation over coffee where you say to the person you're conversing with, you know, I came to be after my body came to be, or my body was once an embryo that wasn't me. These are very absurd things to be thinking about and saying. It is much more reasonable to say that the human being comes to be at a certain point and its value is intrinsic to it. We don't gain value as we grow, as we mature. We had it all along, and it simply unfolds and shows itself through the functions we're able to perform as we grow and mature. But the minute you start saying that our value hinges on some characteristic that some humans are going to have in greater degree than others, you've lost the concept of human equality.
We've bumped up against this several times, and you've mentioned explicitly, but let's talk in our final few minutes about the stem cell research that we can support, that we can encourage.
Well, right now, we can absolutely support adult stem cell research because it is ethical and, as we've said, does not require killing the donor to obtain the cells. We also have some new research coming out. It's called induced pluripotent stem cell treatments. This is where we get normal skin cells, and we, in essence, we reprogram them or trick them, if you will, into functioning like embryonic cells. And the notion here is, and this research has been duplicated, this is not a fluke, the research is showing that these cells that have been reprogrammed can function the same way an embryonic cell can. So the need to kill embryos is gone. The interesting thing is we still have people out there screaming, oh, we shouldn't limit science. We may need these cells. We shouldn't tie the hands of science. I mean, it's like someone arguing that we still ought to be developing covered wagons even though we have jet planes that can get us across the continent. It's absolutely silly. I think the problems with embryonic stem cell research are legion. I think that even those who are honest on the other side admit it, and I think they realize this new research has kind of blown the cover on the agenda of people who really want to kill embryos more than they want to advance cures. And that's the sad thing. Politics is eclipsing getting people the cures they need.
Stephen in Colorado sends a late email for your response. He says, how about a discussion of the Colorado Amendment proposal already on the ballot for November, making a fertilized egg a person? Even many pro-life groups are not taking a position. Your thoughts, what do you know about it?
Well, the reason they're not, they're concerned that, number one, the federal courts will not uphold the amendment and it will just get struck down even if the voters approve it, which would then put one more layer of federal court rulings against the pro-life movement that we have to overcome in the future. It's a simple matter of mathematics. We don't have enough judges on the Supreme Court that are going to uphold that kind of thing. The second concern, and one that I must admit I'm sympathetic to, is the whole idea of personhood language. I think we should have human rights language and argue that embryos are human beings and all human beings have value. Personhood is a concept invented by our adversaries to distinguish human beings that can be killed from those that can't be. And I think we're conceding something in the language we're using here that is very, very destructive to our cause. We ought to simply argue that all humans have value in virtue of the kind of thing they are and deny and reject any kind of personhood classification.
A very good question, Stephen, and thank you for listening in Colorado. Finally, and with only 30 seconds to respond here, Scott, bottom line, what's the trouble with embryonic stem cell research morally?
If we're talking about killing human embryos and those embryos are human beings, then we are killing one human being to benefit another. And just like we shouldn't take your good eye to make my bad eye feel better, we shouldn't kill one human being, even at an early stage of development, to benefit another human being at a later stage of development.
Scott Klusendorf is president of Life Training Institute. Go to the on-demand page of our website tonight, issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org, and you'll find a link to Scott Klusendorf and Life Training Institute. Scott, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Todd.
Tomorrow on the program, we'll talk Christ-centered marriages. We hear a lot about this. The Christian church has been talking about Christ-centered marriages for a long time, and it's always confused me. What does that mean? Do I picture Jesus standing between me and my wife? Well, you know, that's not too far from the truth. Can I deal with my wife? Can she deal with me as anything other than a sinner redeemed by the blood of Jesus Christ, that he actually mediates the relationship between the two of us? We'll talk more about that tomorrow with Pastor Peter Kurowski. You know, that movie's out, Horton Hears a Who. The kids watch this thing. It used to be a book. A person's a person, no matter how small. And it's true. A person is a person. Not to borrow too much from the personhood language, but let's use the right language. A human being is a human being, no matter how small, no matter how undeveloped, no matter how distantly located in a laboratory, a petri dish, a vat of liquid nitrogen, or the mother's womb. A human being is a human being. We do not sacrifice one human being to save another. That sacrifice has been made by Jesus Christ. We protect our neighbors, no matter how small they may be. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 1046, San Juan Capistrano, California, 92693. Box 1046, SJC, California, 92693. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.